Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing today?
Cold. What's up
cold
with this?
Again. This spring. You promised me spring weeks ago. Weeks ago, and there's nothing.
I'm telling you.
Snow, even. It's beyond spring. We're in the heart of winter.
Well, every Wednesday, I think I say the same thing. It's going to get warmer. Last week, we had flurries.
I thought you would know, because you're from Kansas.
Well,
I
don't
have winter there.
They have winter.
They're big winter people.
Yesterday, it felt like Kansas here.
I know.
How about those snowflakes? They were huge.
It was crazy. The whole day, it snowed.
Yeah, it was. It was odd. Lee, I went to a really cool wine tasting last night.
Nice.
And the owner of the vineyard was there, and she invited me to Napa to do a study with her on olive oil.
Oh, cool.
How cool will that be?
You should do it.
I definitely will. So, in the summer months, we'll need a co-host.
Okay, whatever it takes.
You will.
Yeah. Well, you're not bringing me along to this because I enjoy Napa as well.
Well, you know, maybe we should bring her here again and, you know,
that'd be nice.
Share it with our guests so they can go visit her. It was very cool. Also, want to mention that Networking Atlanta tonight at Sutra Lounge at 6 o'clock.
That's right. Our friend Brandon.
Yes. And then tomorrow we have the Sandy Springs Expo.
Right. Everybody should attend that.
Stop by and see us. We will be there.
And then on the 16th is our event at the Concourse Courtside Grill. In the evening, the day before St. Patrick's Day.
Lots happening. And today I'm excited about this show because a lot of the listeners like to hear stories. And with the economy the way it is, people want to invest in what they think are sound business models. Hence the request for another franchising show. We have a lot of experts with us this morning, a lot of folks that have definitely built their business around franchising. And our first guest this morning is Doreen Morgan. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. Hello. How are you?
Great. So tell us, Doreen, Walden Businesses, what do you do and how do you help folks as it relates to franchising?
We are a merger and acquisition firm based here in Atlanta. My specialty is franchising. I work with franchisors on corporate divestitures, and I work with franchisees to exit out of their businesses. So I sell existing franchises.
Okay, interesting. Now, somebody comes to you. How do you know what franchising model might be best for them?
I will usually refer those to someone that specializes in new development.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. So maybe give us the top five items that need to be reviewed, like the due diligence when you're talking about franchising a concept.
Okay, yeah. The due diligence process, whether it's new development or you're looking at an existing franchise, the due diligence process is very similar. When you get the FDD, that's the Federal Disclosure Documents. It used to be called the UFOC. It's now the Federal Disclosure Documents. There are some key items in that you'll want to review, and the first one being litigation. That's typically in the first section of the FDD. Any franchise company that has been around for any length of time typically will have litigation in their FDD. So that shouldn't be of a huge concern. What you want to look for in that section is were those issues resolved and were they franchise-based, franchisee-related?
Rather than like corporate-related?
Right. Was it a lawsuit against franchisees, against the franchisor? And if it was, were those issues resolved?
Resolved, right.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. We might be putting the cart before the horse a little bit when we're talking about when you buy a franchise, you really want to think about the resale of it too. So what are some of the things, like what are some red flags maybe that those are common mistakes folks make?
Red flags with new development are going to be the unresolved franchisee litigation issues. Those are going to be very little field support. When you get that FDD, you want to go through that. The management team's resumes will be in there. Do they have direct industry experience? Do they have experience building franchise concepts? What is the field support in your area? Do they have actual people that will come in and help you in your business when you need help? If they don't have anyone in your area, that's a red flag. Are they willing?
Everything in the franchise world is, you have to share that, right? Like, you can't hide things. That's one of the benefits of buying a franchise as opposed to, like, someone's individual business, right?
Yes, definitely. Everything they do is regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. So they've got to give you full disclosure, all litigation, their financial situation, their background of the management team. Everything is in that FDD. One thing they do not have to disclose are their earnings claims. This is called the Item 19 in the FDD. And some franchisors will put an earnings claim in their FDD. That gives you an overview of what the franchisors are making on average, and they break that down into quartiles.
So then with that number, are you saying that it doesn't have to be, that's more of a ballpark than an accurate number of the average of the actual franchise owners?
No. If that is disclosed, that's one thing they do not have to disclose in the FDD, because part of a due diligence of a new owner looking at that franchise will be to call the individual franchisees, and the individual franchisees can give that information.
Individually. But not an aggregate. Like that, like, so you can go and call, if there's 20 franchise owners, you can call every one of those 20. That's part of the deal, right?
Yes, you can. You can. And you can even, they disclose two franchisees that have left the system, and you can call them and find out why they left the system. But if the franchisor can put an aggregate of what the franchisees are making in the FDD, but they do not have to. And if they don't, that is not a red flag. Some just choose to do that, right, and some don't.
But is there a way for the franchisor to kind of game the system? Like, say they have one of their franchisees is doing poorly. Is there, like, so I know that they have to disclose all their franchises, but can they just, like, buy back that franchise, you know, to eliminate it from the pool of franchises? So when you're calling the 20, you can see, you don't even know 21 exists because they buy it back and kind of dissolve it?
They have to disclose that it was owned by a franchisee. So you'll have a list of all existing franchisees with the concept, all ex-franchisees of the concept, and they've got to disclose the number of locations that have closed and the number of locations that have transferred. So if you're doing a due diligence of a franchise concept, you can contact franchisees that have left the system and find out why they left the system. And in that due diligence process, you may talk to some people that say, well, the franchisor bought my territory back.
Right.
Okay. Interesting. So I know a lot of folks that are listening are thinking, gosh, I would love to own a franchise. I'd love to be in business for myself. But there's a fear that banks aren't lending. What's your thought on that?
Banks are have been lending less over the past year and a half. There are still loans available. They've been more difficult to find. If you're working with a full-service brokerage firm like Walden, we can assist in that. On the resale side, what they're going to be looking for is still going to be based on performance of the business. But with a franchise concept, unlike an independent Main Street business, you don't have to have direct industry experience. The bank will take transferable experience. But working with a brokerage firm, we can usually help you through that entire process. They are looking for transferable experience. On the new development side, there are new programs that have just come out that will help with the new development opportunities. And again, franchises are easier to get lending for because you don't have to have direct industry experience. They like people with corporate background, mm-hmm. as long as the franchisor performs. And so what they'll look for in the franchisor is how successful their franchisees have been in the past.
Sure.
They usually have to have a little bit of a track record.
So are franchise concepts valued higher than Main Street businesses, do you think?
Typically they are. They do drive a higher value because of the brand recognition typically.
And what's the minimum number of locations or franchises that before you start working with one of these, like say you're a new franchise, like say you have five locations, is that at that point do they come to you, or do they come to you when they just have one and they're thinking of franchising?
If they are thinking, no, what I do is I sell companies. So if you are a franchisor,
So I wouldn't sell my whole whole business.
Right. Say your Express Oil change and you own that concept and you decide that you want to sell that concept. I would take that concept to market. Right now I have a company this week that's going to market. They're in 118 locations across the country. So that's what I do. And I work with independent franchisees. If you own one location, I can assist you in selling that. I work with multi-unit operators to sit down with them and put together an exit strategy plan because that takes some time and some work. And I've worked with people for 3 and 5 years that are multi-unit operators to slowly exit out of their business.
Like selling one at a time until they totally liquidated all their locations.
Right. Sometimes it's one at a time. Sometimes if they own 20 locations, we'll sit down and talk about their goals. If they want to be out of the business completely in 5 years, then I will sit with them and put together a plan, do evaluation of their entire company logistically. It may be that these two locations should be sold at the same time, or to maximize overall value, we should package these three locations together. Mm-hmm. So it could be one at a time.
Right. Are you finding the people that are buying the franchises when you're trying to sell them, are they people that are just recently laid off in corporate, or are they maybe they own other franchises? Who's your typical customer?
If it's a franchisor that is for sale, typically it's another franchise company or a franchise holding company, a private equity firm that will buy those. If it is a multi-unit franchisee, it could be another multi-unit franchisee that's trying to diversify. Maybe they own hardware stores and they want to get into the service industry.
Like something that's complementary.
Interesting.
Right, right.
What, people don't dabble either. It seems they start and they're all
they go
in.
All in.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, when it comes to franchising, it really does seem like it really works for people.
It does. And people coming out of corporate America, I work with a lot of those folks, and franchising is good for them because you can buy a concept. You're in business for yourself, but you're not by yourself, and you can typically build to a multi-unit operator if you want to, depending on the concept, pretty quickly. And that's one thing if you're looking at a franchise concept. If you want to be a multi-unit operator, say you are coming out of corporate America in an executive level position, you may need to be at a multi-unit position. So as you review the FDD and you talk to franchisees, you know, how many multi-unit operators are there in the system and how long did it take them to get there?
Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, are there any events coming up? Do you guys throw events as your company? Can I read about that somewhere?
Well, tomorrow night, Terry College of Business is having an event on franchising. So if you wanted to build a business, buy a business, or sell a business, that'll be a good event. It's at Terry College of Business in Buckhead. I am speaking at that. Jim Ribault, who helps launch new business concepts, will be speaking. A multi-unit Ace Hardware owner will be speaking, and then the master franchisor for Massage Heights.
Oh, wow. He's been on our show.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a veteran.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for being with us today. I know people got a little bit of an idea of what you do. How can they reach you to learn more?
They can reach me at 678-277-9951, and our website is Waldenbus, WALDENBUS.com.
Is that a franchise?
No, it's not.
Holy, always a jokester. Thanks so much for being with us today, Doreen.
Thank you.
We appreciate your expertise. Gosh, there is a lot to know about this. Yeah. Our next guest this morning has a little bit of a different light to shed as well. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Kevin.
Oh, thank you very much. Great to see you guys.
Now, Kevin, you're with Business Trade Group. Tell us what that is.
We are a small boutique franchise development and consulting company. We handle the franchising of businesses from beginning to actually getting them up and running, and also usually stay with them till they sell their first anywhere from 5 to 20 franchises. And then also on occasion we're contacted by franchisors that maybe are not growing as quickly as they would like and would like some help in the marketing and selling or the presentation of their offering to the general public and becoming in actually becoming franchisees. And every once in a while, we'll go into a franchise and look at it from an operational perspective and give some consulting on how to maybe improve operations or maybe make things work a little bit smoother inside.
Is there a rule of thumb of what makes a company franchisable?
Normally, we go through a franchise viability study when we end up considering an engagement with a client. And by and large, for the most part, what we look for is a compelling story. We want a company, number one, that has a compelling story, a special sauce, per se, that makes makes it an attractive concept. We also want to see a company that has a significant time in business operating successfully. The general definition of a franchise is a proven business concept, and we always say none of those words can be missing. So we want to see.
So just clever doesn't cut it, right?
Clever doesn't cut it. What is so that literally is what makes a franchise a franchise?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And what defines proven?
Usually time in business. Towards the end of, we all know that things have been a little bit interesting in the economy for the last year and a half or so. And
like GM may not be a proven business?
Yeah. You know, I think they already have that part locked up.
So when you're saying proven, you're looking for so many years in business, is that the criteria?
Generally speaking, unless you have a franchisor that has significant experience maybe in a particular sector, like if you have a restaurateur that maybe has a couple other restaurant concepts that he's been successful with in the past, he maybe want to roll out a new concept, so you'll consider working with him because he has a proven track record being a franchisor.
Right.
Okay. If you have a guy who does not have that experience, then you're looking for somebody that has a significant time in business, I would say a minimum of at least a couple years.
Right. And then so you can take somebody who has, say that this person owns a restaurant, and you can say, you know, he's the guy that maybe he worked for a franchise system before, and now he started his own thing. It's been 2 years. At that point, you can help him start rolling that out as a franchise?
Yes, sir. That's what we do. We would go in and spend some time with him and extract a tremendous amount of information from him over about a two-day period, put together a strategic plan, put together a budget, letting him know exactly how much this process is going to cost him to get it launched in the way of legal expenses, document preparation, also in the way of what he's going to need for marketing to market the franchise. And then at that particular time, we would go ahead and put together the disclosure document, the license agreement, actually introduce him to a franchise attorney who would review those documents, take the documents and file them in the states that are required. A lot of people don't know franchises are regulated throughout 36 states by the Federal Trade Commission, but there are 14 separate registration states, Georgia not being one of them, that require individual registration with those particular states.
Interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, so it is state by state.
In right. 14 of them.
Right. Okay. Like, you know, like the Californias of the world. Got to jump through their own hoops there.
California, New York. It's always a little special there.
Right.
So what are some of the biggest mistakes business owners make when deciding to franchise?
Well, one you already spoke of is a lot of times they have an idea and they're just not really kind of there yet. They're not really operating for a significant point length of time. One thing that Doreen talked about is they have to disclose financially where they are. A lot of franchisors will go ahead and try to franchise a new co. In other words, they'll go and form a new company and franchise under that, and that's a way to, quote-unquote, not disclose their financial status at that particular time. So sometimes they're just not ready from a particular time in business, profitability. Sometimes their internal operations, they might be understaffed. And it's like any other business. A lot of times they're undercapitalized, and they aren't really ready for what it is that they're going into. They're not really ready to make the kind of time and resource commitment to start what amounts to be a new business.
Right, because the business that they're in is one business, and then selling franchises of their business is another business.
That's exactly right, and supporting those people in a way that they expect to be supported after they stroke what usually is a pretty substantial check.
Right. Is there a number that you like to see a individual location throw off in order to make it worthwhile to franchise?
Not really, especially... That's assuming that we have a location-based franchise. There's a tremendous amount of service-based franchises out there right now that are, some of them are do very well. I work with a dog training franchise right now that does very well, and it's home-based, and it's really low startup cost, and he'd been in business for 13 years before he decided to franchise, but it really depends on the concept itself.
Now, like in that kind of a case, do you help him, like since he's been doing it and he was successful doing it for 13 years, is this something you can come in and go, you know what, okay, let me see what kind of systems you have in place, what, you know, can we build a manual for this so that we can show other people how to do this? Like, do you help them in that regard, or that has to already be in place?
No, we will actually go ahead and there's two different manuals that are involved in franchising. One would be the operations manual of the actual franchise, and then the other would be the training manual. We like to see somebody that's getting ready to franchise have things fairly systematized, at least in their mind, so we can extract it from them in a session and then put it down in writing.
Excellent. Can you maybe walk us through just a brief synopsis of somebody you've worked with and a success story so our listeners can think of when they need to contact you?
Could you be a little more specific?
Maybe give us, like, say, for instance, someone calls you. How do you walk them through this process?
Right. Let's say I want to franchise, which I'm considering franchising this concept, this Atlanta Business Radio X concept. So what would our first conversation be?
Generally speaking, we get most of our the people that we get are from referrals, mm-hmm. people that have talked to some people that either know what we do or have talked to some of our franchise owners.
Or they've heard you on the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Well, we're hoping that's the case. We will normally send out some information. It's a franchise development process. It's a PowerPoint that's about 4 pages long, and it kind of outlines the entire process of time and resources and what's involved. And then we will normally sit down with a prospective client and do what we consider to be a pretty informal franchise viability study. Mm-hmm. We'll ask a lot of questions as far as, you know, what it is, what it does, how it works, why you think it's franchisable, why do you want to franchise? I mean, that's a big question. We want to hear compelling answers. We want to hear a compelling story. We don't want to hear, well, because I want to make a lot of money.
Yeah, I've got it. Okay. Now, that makes sense to me.
There you go.
And then when you have the franchise and you want to sell it, you call Doreen.
There you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Right, Doreen? And when you,
that's right.
Or even if you're thinking ahead and you're buying the franchise and you want to look at an exit strategy because of your age or because of other interests, then, yeah.
I do. I do actually attend some franchisor discovery days, because when someone's buying a franchise, they are looking down the road. What is it, you know, how do I exit out of this, and what is it going to be worth when I want to sell it? So,
okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's good.
That's right. Keep the end in mind, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, Kevin, the folks that are listening are thinking, okay, I've got an idea. How can they contact you?
I would suggest that you give me send me an email. My email is Kevin, and this is a little bit long, at businesstradegroup.com. So that's Kevin at businesstradegroup.com. We have a little booklet that we can send you. It's called Franchising, If, When, and How. And it's pretty informative. It'll ask you some pretty introspective questions about you and your business and where you are, and also get into some discussion on the costs and what you can expect to invest in franchising, and also then kind of what's involved from an overhead view. It's okay. Pretty informative.
Terrific. Thanks so much for being with us today, Kevin.
Thank you. It's been great.
Appreciate all of your knowledge. All right, Lee, now I'm excited about this. So you've heard about the franchising and the concept, and we're all excited about it. Now we're getting ready to talk to some folks that have actually bought franchises. I want to hear from you where you've been, how you got involved. And our first guest this morning is Bill Aiklin. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Bill, Express Oil Change. That's it's a service business, obviously, but we want to know, what were you doing before and how'd you get involved?
I spent about 30 some odd years in corporate America. I started out in banking when I got out of college, and spent the majority of the time with corporate IT. I worked for some software companies, did implementations, customer support, and ran some help desk. And I got to the point after 25, 30 years in that, of going through 4 layoffs, that I decided it was time to do something else. And I was fortunate in that my younger brother, Bob, was looking for a way to invest some of his some of the money that he had. And so we both started looking at the franchise concept. Okay. He wanted me to run the business, and he would put the money up.
Wow. Everybody needs a brother like that.
Exactly. I'm very blessed.
Yeah, no doubt. So when you were looking at franchises, what led you to Express Oil Change as opposed to the millions of others out there?
Yeah, how many other oil firms? Aren't there quite a few?
Yeah, there's quite a few.
So how'd you pick
Jiffy
this
Lube
one?
And Texaco Lube and Valvoline right. has their own franchising. My brother actually did a lot of the research. He went out to the internet, and we looked at several franchising concepts. We looked at Hobby Lobbies. We looked at fast food. And we as we got into it, we decided there are a couple principles that were important to us. One is that we did not want to be 7 days a week. We wanted to give myself and our employees family time. So we looked for a business that was basically Monday through Saturday, a kind of business that when you closed at night, you could leave and go home and relax. So that was part of it. And somehow Bob came across Express Oil Change based out of Birmingham. And we liked the business model. We liked their business principles. And that's how we picked them.
What's the training like for a new franchise owner?
These guys were very impressive because they have a 10-week owner training program. And I can't remember if it's actually a requirement of the franchise agreement, but they really want the owner to go through 10 weeks. And they actually pay for you to come to Birmingham, where they're headquartered, and you actually work in an Express Oil Change corporate store. This organization has about 170 stores throughout the Southeast, and about, I'd say, 60 of them or so are company-owned, corporate-owned, mm-hmm. with the rest being franchised.
So was there any point during while you were going through the training that you go, maybe I should reconsider this?
Funny you mentioned, after about the first week, I called my brother. I was starting to learn how to change oil.
This is the first time you're not a change oil guy?
Did not come out of automotive.
Right. So
this not a do-it-yourselfer. So this was the first time. So I spent my first week changing oil, and I remember calling my brother and said, "Yeah, man, I'm not sure about this."
Yeah, but you bought not only one; you bought multiple franchises, right?
Well, we bought the first franchise. At the time, we were looking for land to build a brand new store here in Atlanta, but mm-hmm. we had challenges with that. So while we were looking for the land, an existing franchisee of the system wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. And corporate put us in touch with them, and we actually bought an existing store.
Okay.
So we started operating an existing store, which was perfect for us because after I came out of the 10-week training, I was able to start managing a store that was already in
right.
place to get an idea what it would be like to build a new store. And then about 6-12 months later was when we had found the land and built our own store.
Right. So that timing worked perfectly
yeah,
then.
It right? worked out very well for us.
Maybe walk us through a day. What's it like?
Are you still doing the oil changes?
No, I've been fortunate, and you know the key to a lot of successful businesses is finding the right people to run
sure.
them for you. So I have two competent managers that we trust and have confidence in. They both had experience in the business, so we hired them. But for the first 6 months or so, I turned over the crew that I inherited for the existing store, and so I was the store manager for the mm-hmm. first 6 months, and I did everything. You know, did inventory, changed oil. Not a mechanic, so I had to have other people
right.
do that.
But, so at that point, were you, like, hating life? Because that's not what you signed in for, right?
No, actually I did. We knew going into it, we wanted to be hands-on owners.
Right.
We were not going to be...
Even though you aren't a hands-on, fix-it guy.
No. Yeah. I mean, we accepted that as part of the territory.
Right.
And it was fun because I like learning new things.
Okay.
And so that was it was a challenge, but
sure.
I enjoyed it.
And then so the 6 months came and you were able to delegate then
mm-hmm.
and then be more of the overseer. And
right. And I would still spend time at the store, but here we are almost 3 years later since we started the first one, and I'm not at the stores every day.
Right.
Where are the locations?
I have two in Woodstock. One's on Highway 92 off of Exit 7, 575. Mm-hmm. And the other one's in Town Lake.
And then how long have you been doing it now? How long has it been?
We started running the first store in February of 2007, and we opened the new store in March of 2008. So about 3 years.
3 years now. So has it met your expectations? Are you happy it went this way?
Yeah, we're very happy with it. It has taken a while to get profitable, especially in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
My first store that we took over was profitable in 2009. The second store is still showing growth. And we expect it to turn a profit this year.
Anything special going on in your industry?
You know, it's interesting. For the type of business that we're in, it's sad and a benefit to us at the same time. The troubles that the manufacturers are going through, like GM and Ford, mm-hmm. and the rest, the dealership closings are sad for those industries, but they actually benefit us.
Oh yeah,
because we're not just an oil change; we're also a full service mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
So when a dealership closes, consumers have to go somewhere to get the cars
car fixed,
right.
And
they come to us. So it's actually been a help to us.
Now, what percentage of the business is car repairs and what percentage is oil change?
I'd say throughout this chain, it's probably been like 60-40, with 60 being the oil change, 40 being mechanical.
Is that kind of the carrot that gets them in, and then once they're in, they're like, oh, why don't you fix this too?
Yeah, the business model is, from where these guys, I think, are different than the other oil changes, we wanted to wow the customer. It's a 10-minute oil change. You wait in your car. We wanted to give the new customer an excellent experience.
Right.
Enough so that they would come back, get trust in us, confidence in us, and then at that point turn over their mechanical business to us.
And that,
the ultimate goal is to get to 50-50.
Right.
50% mechanical, 50% oil change.
That's a great concept.
Yeah.
And especially if you can get a fast oil change, because that's one of those
and
things.
And sitting in the car, that's unusual, right?
Yeah. I think we're one of the few ones that do that.
Yeah,
you don't
that's
have to
my
go
office,
to lobby.
By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can be productive.
And, you know, people have their dogs, they have their children. They're
can I get Wi-Fi while I'm sitting in my car?
Yes, you can.
Ah, there you go. Amy, you're done. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. Sign me up. No doubt. Now, let us know, what are your plans? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
We our original goal when we decided to do this was to have 3 to 5 of these stores. So I think when the economy picks up again, we'll look at number 3.
So are you starting to kind of scout locations? Would you want them to be in the Woodstock area, or are you looking to expand?
You know, there's not the franchisor doesn't have strict marketing areas, but we've kind of carved out for ourselves. There's about 5 owners in the Atlanta market.
Right.
We've kind of carved out Cherokee County in that area. In fact, a year ago, before things really got bad, we had a contract on a site up in Canton.
Oh, wow. So that
but backed out of it, fortunately.
Right. That would have been a little stressful now, huh?
For sure, yeah.
Is your brother still involved, or is he just the cash guy?
He's basically the cash guy. But he's also the CEO. I mean, you know, I report to him. He actually lives in California, so.
Okay.
That's good. So he's nowhere near you. You can do whatever you want.
I don't have a day-to-day boss.
Everybody needs a brother like Bob, though.
Yeah, exactly. Really.
And you'll be giving out his number, right, in case any of the people here need some money.
For sure.
Oh, gosh. Well, Bill, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. I know a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs, and they look for motivation and inspiration, and I think you've definitely given them.
And it's nice when the family can work together.
Yeah,
I mean, that probably brings your family close, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, and parts of the other members of the family have invested in it, too. So it's Bob's the principal, but there's others that have invested as well.
That's great.
So it has turned into a nice family business, and we've had a lot of fun with it. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
Well, that's great. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And if folks want to visit your locations, give those one more time.
Yeah, the Highway 92 and Ragsdale Road. That's exit 7 off of 575, and then Town Lake Parkway, it's exit 8 off of 575.
Now, if I want to pay extra, can I get you to change my oil?
Sure, yeah. I'll give you my number and you can call me.
Okay.
I still know how to change oil.
That's good. That's awesome, Lee. I mean, think about that. You could pull up and it wouldn't interrupt your day at all.
That's perfect for you.
You love that. I do love
that.
I like to multitask. Yeah. That would be wonderful. Well, thanks for being with us today, Bill. That was great. There's so many different types of franchises out there. I mean, gosh, we've had lots of guests in the past on the franchising show, and they ranged anywhere from fast food to dog training to, well, shipping. Our next guest is Scott Bowen. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, Scott, tell us about Unishippers.
Unishippers have been in business for 23 years, based in Salt Lake City. What we do is provide complete shipping services to the small and medium business market, from small package to less than truckload, ocean, international. It's like some of the commercials you see, shipping can be scary, and we take the scary out of it.
Okay, even scarier than that, Scott, and this is probably an indication to my work day, but sometimes I look at the requests for the Atlanta Business Radio Show late at night, And I laughed out loud when I saw the request from your PR person because I thought it said Eunice slippers. And I kept thinking, what good is one slipper?
So it's after, for the lost slippers. It's a big market. You lose one slipper, what
you know,
do you do?
There's something for everyone. And then as I read further, I'm like, oh, Eunice shippers. Yes, yeah, time for me to get reading glasses. So Eunice shippers is much better than Eunice slippers.
Sure.
And yes, shipping can be scary. So tell us about, you know, maybe how long you've been in business, where you're located, how you got into it.
I've actually only been a franchise owner for 1 year. I got into it by helping another friend look at it. And after looking at the concept, I had been in the corporate world for 17 years, had, you know, involved in a really successful company and growing the company, and that's what I like to do. And I finally decided, well, I think I'm going to do this. They had a really solid plan. The partners are UPS for small package, AAA Cooper, Southeastern, Roadway, a lot of national, you know, reputable carriers for the other type of shipping.
So what kind of savings can you deliver? Because people are listening now and they're thinking, okay, well, there's UPS, there's the post office.
Right, like why should I hire a middleman to ship?
Right. Well, it's really, there's value on both sides of that middleman. For the carriers, we provide economies of scale and an efficient way for them to manage and handle small and medium businesses. For our actual customers, we provide them with, you know, our rates the bigger companies would get.
Right, because if I go directly to UPS, I'm paying retail, right?
Typically, yes.
So if I go to you, I'm getting a discount because you get a discount.
That's right. That's right. And if you go direct to UPS, you know, always pay retail, UPS stores, you will. With us, what we do is get the small business owner a UPS account at wholesale pricing, and then we can you can have discounts if you qualify based on the shipping volume off from there.
Okay, so who are the few? Who are maybe a few of the carriers that Unishippers offers?
Of course, UPS for small package, Saia, Estes, YRC, which is Roadway Yellow that we recently combined, R&L carriers. In addition, we work with DB Schenker for international air freight. Literally any type of shipping, we have a solution. And particularly for small businesses, when they have something unusual and they don't know what to do, you know, we're the shipping advocate for that.
Right. You mentioned to me earlier that, like, eBay people are good clients for you.
Yeah, that's right.
So people who – how many packages do they have to be shipping every month or so to make it worthwhile to give you a call?
To make it, you know, 10 or more per month.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're an eBay person, it's a no-brainer to kind of reach out
sure.
to you, right?
Sure. And the other advantages that they get are if there is a problem, inevitably, it, you know, there will be something from time to time. We know how to navigate that for them and be the squeaky wheel with the carrier.
Right.
With UPS, if you call them direct, you know, they're a big company. You have to go through menus and such. You call our office, and we're local and personal. We answer the phone, and then we know how to navigate that UPS system. We actually have direct lines into facilities, you know, to be the squeaky wheel to get, you know, package delivered if something unusual has happened.
I like the way that sounds. So where are you located in the Atlanta area?
My office is in Griffin, actually, and my territory for Unishippers is South Atlanta all the way down to Macon, over to Columbus, LaGrange, mm-hmm. And there are other franchise owners in the Atlanta area.
Okay, that's good to know. If we go to a website, can we find the locations?
Yes, if you go to unishippers.com, that's unishippers.com.
Not slippers.
Not slippers.
With an H.
Well, I got to tell you, yesterday went to mail just two contracts, and I was at the post office for 45 minutes. It stunk so badly. Their credit card machine was down, and then they only had one scale. I mean, it was so disruptive in my day. If you had one place to go to, so small business owners, how small? I mean, if I only mail 25 packages a month.
Oh, that's
good.
Yeah, that's yeah. a sweet yeah. spot customer for
right.
us.
Right. And then your situation is they still contact UPS to pick it up, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
You know, we provide you with an account number, and then your bill comes from Unishippers.
Right. But UPS still but does
UPS,
the pickup.
Yeah, and all our carriers handle the service.
Right.
We're essentially a sales and customer service force for two small and medium businesses for these carriers.
Right.
So now I have a shipping department. Exactly. I like that.
Exactly.
I like that.
And when something unusual comes up, you know, we're your shipping department. We know, you know, how to handle it.
So Unishippers was founded in 1987. When you were looking at a franchise concept, what led you to this concept? I mean, there's like, again, there's fast food. There's all kinds out there.
Right. Did you think it was slippers, too?
No. Well, my background is sales. And as I said, I had a friend that had been in the real estate business. So had no experience with shipping or anything. And, of course, I did in my business and was looking at it with him. So that's what led me to it. But after looking at how long they've been in business, talking to other franchise owners, seeing how extensive their training and planning was, it seemed pretty clear that if you put in the effort, you could succeed.
That's good.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
Any advice for our listeners that are thinking, maybe, should I? I don't know.
Yeah, what was the thing that kind of pushed you over the top to say, you know what, I'm going to do this?
That got you out of your slippers and into the shippers.
That's right. I've always been entrepreneurial. It's, you know, the prior career, you know, was with a company, went from $6 million to $350 million in, you know, a short amount of time. And you just realize that, you know what, at some point I've got to start so that I can say 5 years later.
Right. You got to take that first step, right?
Right. That's right.
All right.
Good stuff.
Well, good. Thanks for being with us today, Scott, and sharing your story. Gosh, Lee, it's hard to imagine that it can get any better, but this morning we're fortunate enough to
have our roving reporter.
We do. We have a roaming reporter who's live from the Franchise Finance and Development Show in Las Vegas. And we're very excited about having Stan Friedman with us this morning. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
And thank you, Amy. Good morning. So good to be back with you.
Thanks for waking up early in Las Vegas to give us the lowdown on what's going on at the 2010 show.
Well, I got to be honest with you, Amy. The show starts every morning at 8 a.m. with an agenda that's just jam-packed from early in the morning until late in the afternoon. So had to get up early anyway, but I'm delighted to be able to share a little bit of what's going on out here with your audience today. It's a tough time. The economy, everybody has felt the pains of the economy. But I don't think there are anyone or any people out there who have felt it any worse than those trying to find their way into business, trying to acquire franchises, trying to take control of their destiny, and running into the brick walls that the economy and the recession has caused in tightening up credit and tightening up money and making it a little more difficult and challenging to actualize the American dream. So there are a great many people here, several hundred people at this conference that are CFOs, chief development officers of franchise companies from all over the country, a fairly significant contingent, I might add, from Atlanta, that are here learning from one another. You know, what do we have to do in this new time and in these new times? Because the truth is, everyone believes that 2010 is going to improve and that situations are going to get better. But everyone also seems to agree that what it was in our rearview mirror is gone, and we'll never be quite the same again. So adjustments need to be made. People getting outside the box, getting a little more creative, trying to think through scenarios to navigate the course for 2010 and ahead.
So what does this new normal look like?
The new normal.
Well, it looks different. It looks different in what it takes for somebody to acquire credit. You know, the SBA has been a moving target with changes in their programs that will enable people that have what would be in the past deemed to be reasonably good credit. It doesn't just take good credit from the applicant anymore. It actually takes a franchise system that has good credit, has a strong balance sheet. It takes fiscal responsibility not only on the part of the applicant for the franchise, but the banks that are being asked to loan money for the franchise are looking even more closely now at the performance of the franchisor who's awarding the franchise. It's just a much tighter environment. It's a different playing field.
Tell our listeners, what's your involvement in the Southeast? I mean, you have a big role. Aren't you the head of something? Something's done. What's your role in the Southeast?
In Atlanta, Georgia?
Yes.
I'm chairman and founder of the Atlanta Franchise Alliance, as well as the president of my own franchise concept called RetroTech, which we've talked about in the past on your show. The Atlanta Franchise Alliance is a organization that networks and meets every fourth Wednesday at the Buckhead Bar and Grill. We have a networking event every fourth Wednesday of the month, and we come together to do locally the things that I'm all the way out here in Las Vegas trying to learn about at this conference. We network. We, you know, these are thought leaders that come together from the world of franchising to just share ideas and to network with one another. Could be franchisors, could be franchisees. It could even be suppliers and those who have an interest in offering services to those franchisors or franchisees. Anyone with an interest in franchising, we provide a place to just get together and network with one another on a monthly basis and you know, just break bread, have a cocktail or a glass of Coke, and meet people that can help you expand your ideas and your dreams while you maybe share with some others some things that you've cracked the code on already that they may need help on.
Now, have you learned anything there yet? Anything you want to share? Any breaking news?
I don't know about breaking news, Lee. I would suggest, though, that there's an optimistic mood here. Everyone is in agreement that it's a different playing field. You can't drive your car today. It's not your dad's old Buick anymore. The way you know, you can't drive it the way you used to. It's a different track that we're on. But everyone seems optimistic that things are behind us that are as bad as they were. It's already behind us. The road ahead is looking much better, and that we just have to adjust and make adjustments to what we thought was our plan to accommodate this new track that we're driving down together. But the franchising is alive, and we have a strong voice of political advocacy in the International Franchise Association representing our best interests in Washington with our legislators, and that while it's going to be different, it's still going to be okay. And that's, I think, the greatest news I can share from this conference. Everybody is out here with a good degree of optimism that things are going to be better in 2010 than they were in 2009.
So we're not looking back. We're looking ahead, Stan. And a lot of our listeners are thinking, gosh, we'd love to know all the details of your trip and the news. And if they want to engage in with the Franchise Alliance, how can they reach you?
Well, we have a website, the Atlanta Franchise Alliance. Our website is www.atlantafranchisealliance.com. I would also suggest that they find us on Facebook. We have a fan page, and that's where all the updated information can be found on our Facebook fan page. So just look us up there. And I would also encourage anyone who wants to learn more about what's going on out here to visit franchisetimes.com. That's franchisetimes.com. Franchise Times is one of the industry's leading trade papers, trade magazines on the franchise industry, and they are the hosts and promoters, producers, and creators of this conference that I'm at out here in Las Vegas.
Terrific. Gosh, Stan, thanks for sharing with us and for giving us the live update. I feel like I'm there. You know, I wish I were because it's still cold here,
yeah,
by the way.
I don't hear the slot machines, Stan. Are you sure?
You know, I was tempted, Lee, but I just let my better judgment prevail and said, let's do this from the room instead of the casino.
Okay. Thanks for making that sacrifice for us.
Oh, goodness. Well, Stan, thanks so much for being with us today, and we are looking forward to reconnecting with you and having you back in the studio for another franchising show so you can give us the updates on RetroTax as well at that time.
Looking forward to seeing you guys very soon.
Okay,
wonderful.
Thanks.
Bye-bye, Stan.
Bye.
To all of our listeners, thanks so much for being with us today. We hope you found this franchising segment helpful. And please send us requests and information, nominations for additional guests. And let's see, Lee, when do we want to do another franchising show? Maybe
every 6 months or so?
Yeah, I think so. Every 6 months.
Before the end of the year.
To let every... Don't say that. Gosh, that seems
6 months.
Wow. Time flies.
Three,
it's March.
Right? 9. Okay.
Whew, time does fly when you're having fun. Thanks for listening to us this week. We hope you tune in next week when I'll be at the beach. But
that's
we have
right.
A great show lined up if you want to learn more about some restaurant information, right? We've got a big restaurant show next week.
Yes.
Tune in. And until then, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Have a wonderful week.